Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast entitled Simply Predictive Maintenance. I'm your moderator, Brandon Lewis, here with today's presenter, Dan Isaacs, who is the Director of Connected Systems at Xilinx. I'd like to start by more formally introducing Dan, who's responsible for defining and executing the ecosystem strategy for industrial IoT and connected systems at Xilinx. Dan is also the company's representative to the Industrial Internet Consortium and has more than 25 years of experience working in military aeronautics, automotive, and consumer companies such as Hughes, Ford, NEC, and LSI Logic. During his career, Dan has held positions in software design as an FPGA design engineer, systems verification engineer, applications engineer, and other technical management roles. He holds a degree in computer engineering from Cal State University in electrical engineering and a bachelor's of science in geophysics from Arizona State University. Now, before we begin, there are a few housekeeping items to address, starting with the features of your audience viewing console. The Enlarge Slides button will maximize the presentation slides to fill your entire screen. Second, the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you prefer to follow along with a hard copy. The Forward to a Friend button allows you to send an email that includes a registration link to the CCAST so that friends and colleagues can also attend. Perhaps most importantly, the Ask a Question text box lets you participate in the event by simply typing questions into the box and hitting the Submit Question button. You can submit questions at any time during the course of the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while you're reviewing the material. We'll address as many of these as possible during the closing Q&A, and if you have questions about the eCast operation itself, feel free to submit those as well, and one of our technicians will be happy to assist you. A final reminder is that all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded without prior permission. And at this point, we can go ahead and get started. So I'll hand it off to Dan Isaacs of Xilinx. Dan, take it away.
Great. Thank you, Brandon. All right. So what I'm going to talk about really is the area for predictive maintenance in industrial manufacturing, and really how this is being used to bring greater intelligence to factories and production. And I like this slide because it really shows the sort of the evolution of how analytics have come about. And if you look at this, it's really a natural evolution where it's gone from reporting, I guess when you look at it from the initial stages, the reporting, the descriptive analytics, the monitoring, you could think all of that as condition monitoring, which is not predictive. It really is more about understanding what the system is doing. It's the diagnosis of it. And as you can see here, you know, it's going through what happened. So it's more, in this case, reactive. And then understanding why did that happen. But it has nothing to do with the actual predicting, where now you get up into the stage here where it says, all right, what will happen? I'm anticipating this based on the data. What could happen? And you can see the axis here where, in terms of the value relative to the business, in terms of each of these stages, and then also on the y-axis, you're looking at the innovation and the areas, and that's what we've continued to advance and continue to develop. And then at the very end, then you can say, okay, what conditions could cause this to happen, and how can I head those off in advance? So now you go from the area of predictive to actually prescriptive. So if we look at machine learning as applied in terms of industrial IoT, you can see here predictive maintenance being one of those key aspects where we're now moving from that condition monitoring, that diagnosis, the reactive side of that, to more of a predictive and even to that prescriptive. So if you think about it, you have normal scheduled downtime for preventative, whether it's needed or not. What you want to do is get to a point where you can utilize the asset to the greatest extent and continue to build from that. And so now you get different means and mechanisms. One of the key machine learning areas we'll emphasize here is in terms of anomaly detection and being able to identify things out of normal operation and being able to do that in a more efficient and optimized way in terms of being able to use machine learning to do that. And you'll see examples of that We'll look at a very specific example in terms of industrial manufacturing, and this is relative to a CNC machine that manufactures powertrain components. And we'll go in depth and look at all the different areas. as Brandon had mentioned, I represent our company to the Industrial Internet Consortium, and one of the big differentiators of that consortium over others is the fact that they have this working group around innovation and demonstrating that through test beds. So I'll be talking about a specific test bed implementation. It's actually public. It's on the IIC Consortium webpage, and there'll be links to this described throughout the presentation. And then, as I said, once we get into that mode, then moving towards that more prescriptive side of things where the operation happens more in an autonomous fashion. And, of course, being able to do this in a secure and safe environment. So if we look at overall savings in terms of, you know, why are we really – looking towards these different areas and what are we going to get in terms of the advantage. Remember that chart I was showing about the reactive maintenance versus the preventative versus the predictive. And you can see you need to look at a failure in terms of the overall cost. And through this predictive maintenance approach, significantly higher in terms of overall savings relative to reactive, obviously, and then even over preventative. And these are numbers that that have come through experience, understanding some of the different areas associated with that. But as I said, you do need to look at that total cost of failure in terms of what does that unplanned downtime cost, idling labor forces, the time it takes to actually get the replacement parts in. There could be long lead times on that. So all these delays lead to pretty significant costs related to that. And so here you can see that looking at a growth here of effectively the growth rate of over almost 30%, where the overall market expected growth for that predictive maintenance is projected to significantly increase over the near term. If you look at this is just out to 2021. You can imagine with all the advances going on. So that's within the next really 3 years, seeing that type of growth. And another chart here showing further exemplifying this is looking at that cost to repair. You're going from, again, the condition of the equipment all the way out through these different areas and the time of detection of the event and what that cost to repair would be. So let's look at a very specific example of that. As I was talking about, this is looking at this CNC machine. Again, keep in mind, these are over $1 million for these machines. So early failure of these systems really is very, very costly. Being able to predict in advance of that has significant savings. So this is actual data from one of the systems that was operating in an automotive plant, and they had noticed some discrepancies in terms of the data, but they really didn't understand what that data meant. And so when they first caught wind of this, you can see this is after the fact, going back and looking to understand what happened. Were they actually detecting any of these events? If they had identified this as a problem that could lead to catastrophic failure, they could have saved quite a bit in terms of going ahead and taking the machine offline, as opposed to waiting. And it was just within that four-day period. Then when these machines failed, they failed pretty spectacularly. And we'll talk about the key component, that being the spindle head that's doing all the milling and drilling, all the different types of operations on these powertrain components. When that failed, in this case, it literally exploded inside the machine, and it took out quite a bit of the electronics, and it was over $250,000 to replace it at that point in time. So going back through that, they said, is there data that we could see and understand and analyze in advance of this that would be able to identify abnormal operations. And they started applying some of these, looking at this. They started applying this, even just looking at the existing code that they had running in the various CNC machines. And looking at that, they found there were some minor discrepancies, but as you can see here, it was a situation, one of the systems in one of the remote plants hadn't been updated or upgraded with the latest software, and that was just running continuously. So they determined that was significant in terms of the cycle time. Just a 2% loss in that cycle time translated to over 20 components that they would have had per day. Equate that out over the year, you're looking at thousands per year. And that was just from one minor detection in the code. And they were running a different type of algorithm. They were doing a Bayesian network classifier on this. And they identified, hey, we found this problem. Let's verify it. And sure enough, they were able to correct that, bring it back up, and now it's operating at the same level. So that's just one example of how they were able to apply the machine learning to bring more more efficiency, optimize their operation overall. And then these different types of machine learning-based solutions, as I'm showing, bringing those efficiencies, but also being able to identify failure potentials and predict in advance. And so they had different types of monitoring systems, different algorithms they were starting to apply now in real time. And they could be going and doing some of these diagnostics that would then, as we said, going up the ladder there, or going up the steps to reach that ability to do more of the prescriptive analytics. And as you can see here, it's a lot of the failures are considered as random. Over 85% of these failures, they weren't able to understand why, what was happening. So what are the mechanisms that were causing those? And through the through machine learning and predictive analysis, they were able to, or predictive maintenance, they were able to identify this and get much better insight, bringing more intelligence into the factories, into those areas. So this is really looking at some of the components that the manufacturing, the CNC power chain manufacturing system produces. And as I said, it's over 1,000 of the power chains, for instance, the crankshafts per day are generated. So that's running about a minute per powertrain. And so using the predictive maintenance, they felt they had at least an increase of availability of the system through identifying their areas where they might have the failures through these abnormal operation conditions. So reducing almost by 10% in terms of reduction of unexpected downtime. You know, the holy grail, the goal would be not just minimize the downtime, but have no unplanned downtime. And this is one of the mechanisms they're using to get there. So here's an image of what that CNC machine looks like. As I said, these are over $1 million, pretty large, and all the different capabilities, they are top-loaded in terms of the automation, and we'll see some of that coming up here. So this is what really formed the basis of this test bed that we did for being able to evaluate and explore different types of machine learning algorithms and advanced analytics to reach to the point where they can go from the move from the preventative maintenance to the predictive, and then even get to the point of the prescriptive level, where these are identifying these conditions, matching them together, and then taking action and effect autonomously. So at the stage of the predictive analysis, that's really what the Smart Factory Machine Learning for Predictive Analysis Testbed, sponsored by both Xilinx and the research and development arm, the machine learning arm of the Acheter company. Acheter is a larger conglomerate. It has about 12 different companies associated with it, both from R&D, software, imaging capability, We'll see some of the examples there where they're using laser process and technology through one of their other companies, subsidiaries. So Angura is 100% wholly owned subsidiary of the Acetor company, the manufacturer of those CNC machines. And through the IEC, through the cooperation and collaboration, there's about a dozen different companies that are participating in this testbed, which is really providing a capability from looking at it from the edge all the way up to the cloud, and supporting this whole approach of understanding opportunities where machine learning can advance the intelligence and bring capabilities forward for the predictive maintenance, and then move towards that prescriptive, as we were talking about. So just looking a little bit at the testbed itself and sort of the components of that, the concept is really to take the, at the physical layer, the level, the operational side, the OT, the classic statements being where you have the convergence of the OT, the operational technology, with the informational technology. Here you can see, looking at it from a standpoint of both at the functional level, the machine level, then the automation level. Acetor has another company that actually provides the entire automation aspect of this, from the robotics to being able to do all the components necessary for a true manufacturing cell to automate that process. And then you now look at that manufacturing cell, produce multiple of those. Now you have a complete production line. And then even going beyond that, from the production line, looking at the representation of a factory on a factory-by-factory basis. There's a global footprint of these CNC machines in automotive OEMs. And so being able to gather this data and analyze this in these different fashions, they are recognizing that they're able to increase productivity, efficiency, optimize the overall manufacturing process by taking advantage of these different areas. So you have it at the operational level, then you have the convergence where you bring in the connectivity, the data aspect, you bring in the convergence with the information technology, all of this to be able to gain that that insight into what's happening. And whether that's at the system level, at the manufacturing cell level, as I said, or the production of the factory line. So that's the ambition of this testbed, and it's already in progress, and you'll see some of these different areas being highlighted by example, and some of these are already being, as I said, they're already being implemented in production lines. So looking one more level down, now we look at the really, what are the components that we're looking at? We're looking at both the standard actuators and servos, the I would call them the less intelligent sensors, then bringing up the more intelligence, the connected with the processing capabilities, the control, all the way into the areas. And this is all aligned to the Industrial Internet Consortium's reference architecture. So there's guidelines and documentation out in all of these different areas, whether it's on the connectivity side, whether it's what a reference architecture and platform would look like, and then the business solution side. So I encourage you, if you haven't taken a look at that before, check out all the information that's there from the consortium. It's a massive amount of information and data compiled in terms of best practices from, there's over, I think it's closing on 300 companies now that are members of the consortium. And through this collaboration, being able to share best practices and provide guidelines for companies that are interested in these different areas and wondering, you know, how do we get started? What are some areas of focus? And this is just one test bed out of, I think there's over 25 test beds that are out there. So again, all of this being public, all of this on the site, I encourage you to take a look at that. So looking at the solution overview here, you can see we added a layer from the out from the edge piece where you have the operational, the platform, then going into more of the analytics and the areas where you have the cloud, and then even to the business services. So really this test bed encompasses from the devices, the endpoint, all the way up through the cloud, and then how that information can be used, that actionable insight. You have all this data. How does that now translate back into the factory in terms of the manufacturing, the MES level side, and then the enterprise resource planning side? And that's now where you get into the business services, and we'll talk about some of the examples, how those are being recognized and used. So now we take a look further in terms of the different types of services. Here you can see the different areas at the edge where we're talking about the devices themselves, what are some of the key components and aspects associated with those, then even getting into the transport and the protocols, leveraging time-sensitive networks. So with TSN, being able to have that deterministic capability of transmitting the data, and then being able to use that and doing, whether it's in real time at the platform level or whether it's being managed up in the cloud at the enterprise level, and as I said, with ties to the business services. And so again, looking at the different areas now where we're applying the sort of these different scenarios, and what are the focused areas for that machine learning relative to predictive maintenance, and also in terms of overall efficiency of the plant, whether it's energy or whether it's capability, overall production output. So we look at it from four different stages, as I was saying, with the CNC machine itself, the automation. Now you're looking at the interaction and the behavior where you have the machine-to-machine, looking at energy consumption, looking at interactions between these different areas, and then going forward even in terms of the behavior at the overall production line and characterizing those, as well as I said, to the factory. So all of these different aspects associated with the predictive maintenance for this specific test bed. And so when we look at that, the large CNC machine, you need to identify where are the key components, where are the most critical. And in this case, it really is the spindle, the operation of the spindle that's attaching the different, or allows it to attach the different types of machine tools, whether it's drilling, milling, these different aspects associated with that. Here's some example. As I said, 1 minute is what they're looking at in terms of cycle time. So fully automated process and being able to have a completely prepared powertrain every minute and have a very high utilization for that, because again, this is for automotive manufacturing. So, you know, you're actually holding up the assembly of the vehicles if you can't keep up pace, and they want to have a very high utilization of these different machines. So key to this is in terms, as I said, the spindle head, that's the critical component where they focused on that. And here you can see the example I had shown earlier, what that cost of failure is, the impact. And this is in a best case, really looking at taking out a couple days worth of working shifts, and then the people that are impacted. And if it's longer delays on top of that, as I talked about the overall, you can see that can get very expensive very quickly. So how are we analyzing it? What's going on within the test bed in terms of this machine learning? What's being applied? And what they're looking at is looking at, again, both from a standpoint of understanding the operation, the spindle itself, what is the normal operation? How do we characterize that? How can we identify in advance before any of these failures? So they're looking at applying different clustering techniques, different characteristics, and focusing on really how can we apply those different algorithms in a way that's going to give us this visibility and this insight. So now we'll start taking a look at more in depth in terms of the approach being used. So looking at it from a unsupervised learning as well as supervised learning, and then being able to then apply different types of additional algorithms around that. And so here you can see sort of the anatomy of the spindle itself. You can see on the cutaway here with the different area for the ball bearings and monitoring all the different aspects. And so we really need to start. The first understanding is really what is a normal operation? How do I characterize that? How do I identify that? And one of the key elements, and this has been designed using programmable technology, one of the key elements is the Oberon system that is from has been designed and developed by Ungura to really monitor this and act as sort of that sensor fusion hub, being able to bring very different types of sensors in, different modalities, being able to analyze those in real time, process that information, and then be able to identify and have some of these different types of filtering mechanisms, have these algorithms running on this system. And again, as I said, sensor hub, communications hub, secure, all the different areas that we highlighted earlier, being able to be provided through this intelligent gateway. And at the heart of that is the Xilinx Zinc programmable SoC. And what we're, for those of you not familiar with that, what effectively what the programmable SoC does, what the Zinc family is it's a complete processing system. And this is the latest, this is the our Zinc multiprocessing heterogeneous Zinc ultrascale MPSoC platform. And you can see here it has a complete ARM processing system. So it has both application processing as well as real-time processing. So there's quad ARM A53 processing complex along with dedicated real-time processing. These are dual R5 processors. And then it has all the complete infrastructure, everything you would expect from a discrete processor. It has the memory controllers on board, has all the peripherals, just like you would expect from a discrete processor. But what we've done is now we've tightly coupled that to the programmable logic. So the key here is you have over 6,000 lines between the processing system and the programmable logic. So very high speed I/O bandwidth ratio between the processing system and the programmable logic. And because it is highly programmable, highly configurable, you can take these different types of algorithms. Say what Ungura had done was they had specific algorithms they had written in C++, and they were able to accelerate those into the programmable logic, and we'll talk about some of the metrics in the next coming slides. But here you can see some of the capabilities, whether it's the different, as I said, acceleration, the real-time processing capabilities, motor control, signal processing, image processing, again, the sensor fusion, and then being able to take and design and have these different types of machine learning algorithms, whether they're statistical, whether they're neural networks, whether they're, you know, different aspects associated with those. So there's a whole library of these that are available, and Ungura is their expertise is in machine learning, and they work with several of our ecosystem partners to be able to completely build and develop their Oberon system based on this platform. And the other thing, not just the configurable logic, but also the highly configurable I/O as well to support the variety of different industrial Ethernet standards and protocols necessary for the different environments. Some of the automotive OEMs have different interfaces and protocols that they're using, so being able to provide that flexibility and capability also very key. Another reason why the Zinc programmable SoC is an ideal platform for industrial IoT. Also built-in security and functional safety capabilities, quite a bit around that, but that's the topic of an entire entirely separate webinar. All right, so here was an example again using this, what they had shown in terms of their the acceleration they were able to achieve with their algorithms. You can see where they had it running specifically on the processor. So they ran in the ARM processor. You can see the time frame there that it took to complete. And then they moved that into the FPGA, but they didn't really optimize that and take advantage of the full capabilities until later. So this was all gradual development in stages, but you can see the tremendous increase that they were able to accomplish with this. And what this is doing also, it's offloading the processing complex so they can add additional tasks and functionality onto that while they're leveraging the programmable logic for this algorithmic acceleration and additional functionality. So getting into more of the analysis now, to understand sort of what the heart of the CNC machine is based on, and for this machine learning, how they're doing the predictive, the different types of analytics, let's look at some of the machine learning and what they've been using. So from that standpoint, there's obviously very different approaches that could be taken. That's, again, the beauty of the testbed, being able to accommodate and explore different approaches for the machine learning, different algorithms, different analysis techniques. So one way, obviously, visual, using traditional tools, analysis tools. Another, now you get back into the machine learning side where you're looking at, as I said, either the unsupervised, supervised learning techniques, other different areas. You get into some of the neural networks and evolve and continue to develop and identify those. One of the things is how do you understand what's happening in, how do you separate the signal from the noise, so to speak, understand the relationships, and being able to have control over those different relations. So here one example was showing some of the clustering techniques they looked at. They also looked at some neural networks. And really the one of the keys was that it was hard to identify what the relationship was between these. So there was, in terms of the different values they were looking at, how do they identify and specify those? So looking at that from an overall machine learning, really look at the structural patterns in the data, being able to classify, to predict, to gain the new insights, get new knowledge from that that they hadn't been able to see or see the patterns before, just because of the tremendous amount of data that's being generated off these machines. And so looking at this approach from three different areas, whether the first exploring and understanding, and that was more of a unsupervised level, and just collecting the data based on the different parameters that they were interested in, looking at the vibration, looking at torque, looking at power, temperature, different areas on the within the system and the spindle itself. And then being able from that to generate some descriptive types of models. And from those models, be able to understand relationships that they weren't able to see in the past, and then move to that predictive modeling and say, based on this, we would expect to see these types of scenarios. So here you can see sort of the different approaches that they took or that have been applied and that are being applied within this testbed and even, as I said, in the pilot factory to date. So this is an example here showcasing some of that analysis where they went through and they did some performance in terms of this. So they, looking at it from a standpoint of a standard clustering, whether it's using k-means or agglomerative hierarchical approaches, they really, you get a lot of information here, but it's what is the relationship? How can you understand what that meaning is? So this is, again, in that exploratory stage. Look at the data without really or having a clear, specific way. So you're in that unsupervised mode. Look at some of the smaller amounts of data. You can apply standard visualization. You can sort of see the relationships here. But now when you get into the larger data, you need to be able to have more reduction of that and be able to understand that. So they applied dimensional reduction in this. So they're monitoring essentially or looking at this from a standpoint of 14 different variables. And they needed, so now you have 14 different dimensions effectively. And so what you're looking at is the different frequencies. There were multiple amplitudes they were looking at, combining that with, again, the vibration, the torque, the power, the RPMs, all of this different types of data. So they had to use some type of way to reduce that data and bringing that down into a two-dimensional way. Here you can see sort of the analysis, the different servo motors over those different variables per servo. And so now looking again, understanding what the relationship is, and they found using a Gaussian mixture model, they were able to identify very specific areas here. And so through these machine learning techniques, you can see here capturing some of this with more of a supervised focus and understanding, looking at it at an acceleration level. So the highlights here being able to show you what's happening during the acceleration, what's happening when it's idle, and also when you're just going through and spinning the actual the spindle and gather that data. So looking at that and understanding that. So here you can see from going through and doing the probability, the clustering of these different areas, looking at the different, what they're saying, considered as this novelty detection, understanding where the anomalies are, but then understanding what are really areas that, even though they're anomalies, they're acceptable in terms of the operation. And so you're looking to eliminate as many false positives as possible through this. So you're classifying these, you're identifying what is a true anomaly versus something that is more of a false positive. And then from that, you can identify specific dependencies, all of this leading to identifying where the real anomalies are that are indicating degradation of the system with potential failure mechanisms. And so looking at that, as I said, taking that data and then capturing that in real time, doing the analysis, and then being able to go up and take that information out into the cloud and be able to use different areas of that. And so we have some examples where through the system, again, depending on which where the automotive OEM, what type of infrastructure they have in place, whether it's on-prem or whether it's, as I said, up in the cloud, they have support, and we're working with both Microsoft, GE in terms of Predicts and their asset performance management system, having agent actually directly on the Oberon system, being able to tie directly into the up through the cloud based on the different protocols for identifying these different areas and looking at it from the different KPIs really specific to the maintenance of these systems and being able to show that. I'll show a dashboard of that where they had some examples they had actually presented at the last Minds and Machines conference here in San Francisco. That's GE's big partner presentation where they talk about all the advances and the capabilities. And because this is so unique, this approach and what they were able to achieve, they had actually invited Eingar to come out and talk about what they had been doing and how they were doing that. And then, as I also talked about, once you get this information, you know, how do you make use of that? How does that tie back in terms of other areas and your enterprise resource planning, your other business services? And so there it is. So here's the dashboard, the preset for that was shown for the GE with Predicts that was running on the system. They demonstrated that. And then this is a company called XM Pro, also another Industrial Internet Consortium member, where they are able to take the data that's being provided and identify that and actually be able to trigger different types of alerts, different types of services, actually go in and have work orders prepared. And so this now gets right back into you know, sort of at the very back end. Now we've gone through this, we've got all the analytics, we've got the actionable insight. How does that translate back into the factory? This is one example of that. There's several templates and structures and flows. But we'll be having more detail on this in subsequent presentations. Oops. So this is a demonstration that was shown at Hanover, one of the Hanover shows. I believe this was their automation show, where they actually showcased a complete system. Here you can see the two different spindles, one red, one blue. They had different parameters. They were monitoring those. There was actually another screen off to the side that was showing the machine learning, the clustering, the analytics being done in real time, and you could actually see those variations as during the operation. Here you can see the setup they had for the Oberon systems. In this case, they had multiple systems being able to show each one of the variants on this area. But this is a complete setup. This is very similar to what's running in the test lab, in the test bed today at their facility. All right, I know a lot of information, but I'd also talked about some of the visual analytics, so I wanted to get a little bit of that in. So as I said, through the Cheddar umbrella, there is another company called Talens, and Talens does all the high-performance laser capabilities. So they're working very closely with Angura, working with the R&D teams, and developing that. And the idea was, can we be able to detect, again, through the machine learning, can we detect where we have anomalies in terms of the operation of this system? So this is another platform. You can sort of see here what the goal was, to be able to automate this using machine learning. And there's a very very interesting video out on this. And if you're interested in seeing more and hearing more details about this, feel free to contact information at the end of the presentation here. But this is within their system, this Ryo box. It actually has the equivalent of the Oberon devices capabilities there. And what it's doing is you have also the whole laser generation, 8-kilowatt laser. If you think about it, what they're doing is they're doing hardening of the surface for the powertrain as that final stage. And when they do that, they need to have very precise, very accurate timing in terms of how long that laser is focused on the on that specific area within the powertrain itself. And so what you're seeing here is a representation where they have both a full-on powertrain actually going through the hardening process. Here you can actually see the laser hitting that surface, but they also have a digital twin. And the digital twin is monitoring in real time, again, the data that's coming out, what the image is. There's multiple cameras within the system, and they're operating at 1,000 frames per second and capturing this information. And so, again, very similar in nature. Here you can see a aggregation of the pixel information coming out of those. So it's 1,000 frames per second. So high-speed thermography for acquiring that data. Again, using the programmable SoCs for capturing all this information and then being able to do that analysis. Similar approach. We're taking a clustering of the data. So they're partitioning the data depending on the distribution of that, whether it's a soft or a hard approach, and being able to actually show where that clustering of the pixel information is to identify areas where maybe the laser has actually taken been applied for longer than it should have. And you can see this in terms of the thermal analysis. Obviously, the greens, the blue the coolest, the greens at the right level. Now you started seeing coming up a little bit more in terms of the yellow, and then that the brown in the upper left corner there showing that you have some potential areas for failure. So again, all of this is that similar machine learning techniques being applied. Here you sort of see to the far left, you can see the partitioning of those pixels and how they've been applied. So similar machine learning algorithms and clustering approach taken, and then being able to look at that. Remember, the data is changing at 1,000 frames per second. So being able to do this and understand where those areas are that are specific to that, you're partitioning that image in that sense. And so here's a representation. This was actually what was presented at the Minds and Machines conference showcasing this. Here you can see the system, the RAW box. You can see that similar image. And what the scale is right to the right of the image is really the probability. So again, as you're going up the scale in terms of the amount of heat as determined by the clustering of the pixels, you're able to identify the potential failure areas within that. And that's what's also is represented on the bottom chart there, showing some of the areas for where the true anomalies are versus what, again, separating that noise out from the actual representation. And then taking that data and passing that up, so now actionable insight, what are the actions being taken going through to the GD, to the predicts model, to be able to visualize that information, and then also at the time being able to have taken necessary actions and trigger that. So it's sort of the system below sort of shows you that overall representation. So that's another way, another application that machine learning is being used within the manufacture of these powertrains. So that really brings me to the summary here. So you can see the different types of machine learning that we've talked about, being able to have the areas of identification, classification, so you can eliminate the false positives, what the role of Xilinx has been in terms of leveraging the capabilities of the Sync programmable SoC, and being able to bring in the different types of not only just the processing, the capabilities with the machine learning, but also the different types of protocols necessary, support for that, and the real time, the determinism through the time-sensitive networking, as well as with all the security areas that are built from the edge to the cloud. So here you can see really looking at that from overall machine learning, from the hardware, from the software, bringing that expertise from the actual devices themselves and bringing that all together through the cloud. So here's some of the contact information. Javier Diaz is the lead on the program for Angura. And as I said, I represent our company to the Industrial Internet Consortium, where this test bed has been fully approved, and it's actually, as I said, it's public, and there are going to be further webinars. In fact, I think there's a virtual summit coming up where we'll go into even more more specific details in these different areas on the test bed and share some of the latest results. That's coming up towards, I think it's the first week in April. And if there's interest in attending those, please feel free to contact me or Javier, or I believe even on the go to the IAC website, and you'll see reference to that virtual summit. So there's a whole series of different webinars that are being presented as a result of that. Okay, that concludes my presentation. So Brandon, I know a lot of information here, but back to you.
Thanks, Dan. That was some really good stuff. We went all the way around predictive maintenance for machine learning to hardware, software, networking considerations, and that brings us into the Q&A portion of the event. So those of you who have questions, make sure you submit them, and we'll get to as many of them as we can in the time we have remaining. So a bunch of questions already in here. I know Dan just addressed one of them, how they can join the collaboration, so let's move on to would it be possible for you, Dan, to elaborate a little bit on some of the computer languages that are being used to program Sync SoCs?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, if you go to our site, you'll be able to see the different types of operating systems that are supported. We have our own in-house Linux. We call it Petalinux, and we push that out to the open source. But we also have a very extensive ecosystem of support. So the different, I would say, all the standard operating systems you would expect are there. Now, one other area that has come up, and this is, it's more of an open source community activity, and this is around Python. So I think this is something I didn't mention, and there are, this is another full hour's worth easily of content. But this is around our, what we call our Python on Zinc. And as I said, this is a open source community-based project. It was developed out of our CTO office. And if you go to the site, it's called Pynk, P-Y-N-Q. So that's Python on Zinc. You can see a variety of ways and areas. There's an entire community around that, and this is pretty much gone global through different universities. I see this question is from UC Berkeley. There's actually a university program around this, and you can actually get one of these boards with a Zinc programmable SoC on it as part of the university program. I believe they're still offering this. It's tapering off because there's been such a huge interest and demand for it, but for $65, you can get a complete platform, a Pynk system. And I would encourage you to take a look at that. As I said, other areas, and there's multiple ways. We have a complete tool chain through our Vivado tool chain to be able to really provide you a way without actually going down to the RTL level. And this is through our SDSoC, our system, our software development environment for the Zinc programmable SoC, to be able to actually take your C++ algorithms and implement those directly into the FPGA. It calls our high-level synthesis tool as part of the Vivado suite under the hood, but you don't even operate at the RTL level. You're not working at that level. You're actually at the C++, familiar from a software developer standpoint, level. So that's something that's a capability. Obviously, we have a complete ecosystem of partners around that as well. There's another company, another partner called SystemView that has a very graphical oriented way of doing a system level partitioning and being able to literally drag and drop these different functions in. So again, if you have interest in those areas, feel free to email me and I'll be able to get you some more information on that level.
That's great.
Let's see.
Here's another question for you, Dan. You spent most of the presentation going over this, but if you could just do it pretty quickly, how would you, in your own words, describe how predictive maintenance and machine learning is different from classical continuous monitoring using sensors?
Yeah, I think it's, you need, and as I was describing, you obviously have to have a way of acquiring the data, right? So you need that the sensors there. So it's really a part of it, is what I would say. But what the predictive maintenance is doing is, and as I was talking about that sensor fusion, the different types of sensors, what you're monitoring, you're going from that diagnosis, the traditional condition monitoring and diagnosis based on that sensor data, based on the standard analytics, to the level of being able to predict using the machine learning what's going to happen. So you're really looking at moving from what happened, and I've just been monitoring the data without any kind of predictive capability, to what might happen and how, using machine learning, can I head off that from being something that's going to cause me some unplanned downtime. I'm not sure if that fully answered your question, but it really is moving from that level of traditional sensor and monitoring and analytics to being able to understand, gain more insight, have more intelligence, and be able to predict before the system has some type of failure.
That's great. Here's a really interesting question. How do you address security when you're connecting from edge to cloud in a smart factory, in the testbed in particular? And does machine learning play a role in that at all, either at the edge on the device or back in the data center?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'll use that. My answer will actually be based on another plug. I know I sound like a commercial for the Industrial Internet Consortium, but there is actually a security testbed that Xilinx and Underwriter Laboratories have sponsored to showcase that exact or address that exact question. And it's really our devices have been designed from the ground up. We have a dedicated security team, and we work with all the key customers. We get a lot of input. We've been doing this for many, many years. We work with all the, the three-letter agencies also. So the security is really being scrutinized at all levels, and that's on a that's on a global basis. So what we've been able to do is we really look at it from three key tenets, and that's information assurance, trust, and anti-tamper. And that's from the key tenets of at the device level. But now you look at it and you put that into an industrial environment, and you've got to look at that from a level of defense in depth. So now you want to have layers of different areas from the, not just the edge, but from the endpoints themselves, monitoring those endpoints. How do you know that that data is accurate, what you're getting? And then going out up even to the next level, to the platform, and out into the cloud. And so with what the security claims testbed has been able to accomplish is through, again, this tremendous collaboration and leveraging a lot of the work of the security working group within the consortium, has been able to showcase these different technologies from the endpoints all the way up to the cloud. I think at this point we have 18 different partners as part of that. And we've been publishing results. There's actually the ISE just published a document. They have a security framework document that covers from endpoint all the way up to the cloud. There was a recent document, I think it was the last couple of weeks, that was put together by the security working group and a dedicated team for best practices in endpoint security. And this security testbed adheres to those, and actually we're showing how we're aligned to each one of those areas. And if you do an analysis in an industrial environment, what are some of the mechanisms and some of the means of being able to accomplish that security from the edge, from the endpoint up to the cloud? So again, that testbed is public. That's been operational and continues to add new capabilities, new partners, new innovations to that. So I'd encourage you, if whoever had asked this question or others that have interest in this, take a look at that, and again, feel free to contact me. Xilinx is a co-sponsor of that testbed, but really Underwriter Laboratories has, this was about 2.5-3 years ago when we had joined the consortium. Underwriter Laboratories, very, very strong, obviously, globally known, internationally known for their safety certification program. They had been developing a cybersecurity assurance program. They call it CAP, their cybersecurity assurance program, where they can actually, they offer their services to have people that are developing systems that want to be connected but are concerned about their security, where they will evaluate that at the hardware level, at the software level, the system level, all the way through, and even provide a full report and analysis of where some of those vulnerabilities would be and what potential recommended ways to remediate those would be. Obviously, that's a service and that's something through UL, but it's proven pretty significant, and they have had several different areas, whether it's industrial or medical or other areas and other applications, go through that program. And there's some details on that, again, also on the consortium site, leveraging technology that Xilinx has provided, but certainly many other providers have been bringing out that range from, again, the edge to the cloud. And how would you even monitor some of the endpoints? So some of the partners doing some of that. If there's interest there, please email me with that aspect, and I can we can go into some more details there. But that's a great question.
Great. Lightning round, real quick question. There are a bunch of questions here about how people who aren't members of the IIC can get involved in the test bed. How would they go about doing that?
Yeah, I would highly encourage you to take a look at that. If you go to the website for the IIC and you go to the test bed site, each one of those has a template where they have further description, and if there's one that looks of interest to you, there are actually contacts on each one of the test beds to contact. So there's a learn more and there's a for more information contact specifically. And so that's one of the mechanisms. There's also the person who heads up all the test beds. He's the chair of the test bed working group. His name is Joseph Fontaine. He also is the overall, and he can provide information on that to non-members that might potentially become members. So
great. Good stuff. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our time today. And for those of you who had questions, I know there are many of you that we weren't able to get to. We'll be sure to have the appropriate representatives follow up with you. I'd like to thank Dan Isaacs of Xilinx for his excellent insight today on predictive maintenance, everything that's going around on there, from machine learning to connectivity to the Industrial Internet Consortium. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, National Instruments, Contron, and Wind River. Of course, we at Open Systems Media, National Instruments, Wind River, Contron, and Xilinx would like to thank you, the audience, for spending some time with us today and contributing some of those great questions. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will be made available there as well. You can do a web search for the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media's eCast available for download there as MP3s. Thanks again for attending, and have a great day.
Thank you.